Hello and welcome to another Climate Tech podcast, Conversations with the People Trying to Save Us from Ourselves. In this episode, I caught up with my friend Yasha Tarani, co-founder of Climate Choice. I reached Yasha in Berlin to talk about the importance of targeting scope 3 emissions, that is carbon that's produced from a company's supply chain, to hear about the state of play for large companies that want to go to net zero, and why he thinks people pushing for this kind of change within companies are heroes. I'm Ryan Grant Little. Thanks for joining. Yasha, it's great to see you again. Welcome to the podcast.
Great to see you, Ryan. Super happy to be here.
So I've known you for, I don't know, what is it, 7 years or something like that? And we were co-conspirators on the Entrepreneurs Pledge, which was about fellow founders, mostly in the Berlin area, committing to putting some of the money we make from exits to work into impact investing. And back then, you were a software as a service guy. Your first, or at least when I met you, you were working on a reservations platform. But these days, you're a software guy with a particular affinity and 100% devotion to the space of climate. So can you take us back a little bit? Tell us about how you got started and then bring us up to speed about Climate Choice.
Yeah, thanks a lot for inviting me, having me on the podcast. Really excited to be here. As you mentioned, I mean, like when we met like 7-8 years ago, exactly, I was working on Resmio, which was a software as a service company for restaurants. And I basically, you know, like have been entrepreneur my whole life or my whole professional life. You know, like back then, I first learned about the topic actually of climate change, I think like through people like you and other ones that I had discussions about. And I realized, okay, wow, this is really, really big problem. And and back then I thought, okay, you know, like it's great to help restaurants getting in more customers, but like what impact do we have as a company, right? As a startup company. I mean, we spend money, you know, like we make business decisions every day. And I basically thought back then, okay, what can we do as a general company that is not, you know, like in the climate tech or in the impact field? And you know, one of the first things that came back then to my mind was, okay, why don't we just start spending our money more wisely? You know, so kind of like finding, you know, more sustainable coffee providers, like as easy as that, right? Or as not easy as that, I guess. And then like, how can we save energy? Can we switch to renewable energy providers? Do we find green hoster? So very, you know, like pragmatic and simple things. However, that was a kind of like a tough experience, because you realized, okay, wow, you know, like you cannot find these solutions, and you cannot kind of like compare these solutions and understand on what their impact is actually on climate. And that really kind of like sparked the first idea, or the first, you know, like the understanding of the problem and thinking about, okay, wow, if businesses spend so much money and on so many things, even more like consumers, how do they you know, make climate choices basically and on a daily basis. And that kind of like got me started on thinking about the problem.
Okay. So initially you were looking at this, I think this was at a time when you'd taken a break, you were kind of traveling around and trying to think of some cool ideas. And you were looking at this from a consumer perspective, first of all, how people can make better choices. And then you kind of leveled that up to thinking, okay, me as a consumer, I'm spending far less than the average company. And if I'm dealing with these problems, companies are also around sourcing.
So actually, yes, kind of like, but it was actually while I was at my previous company, when this came actually apparent in the context of business decisions. However, you're exactly right. Right. As consumers, we know, you know, like e-commerce shops that solely try to, you know, like select brands that are more, you know, sustainable in their production. So exactly, I was looking for a solution like that, right? I was looking for a place where we can, you know, find these sustainable products, but in a business context. Yeah. You're also right. You know, like after I left the company in 2016 and started, you know, to work on a little bit on consulting and advisory and things like that, and got more into the topic of climate. I work with a couple, companies at Climate Kick.
That's the Climate Kick is sort of the EU pot of money working on climate change solutions.
Yeah, exactly. And started to work with startups there, and I like realized, okay, well, there's so many, great ideas and so many alternatives, and these need to be, known by businesses. And, things kind of felt like, pieces of puzzle, came together, like the experience that I made, a couple of years ago at my previous company. And then the seeing these, business solutions and innovations, and then also, thinking more about, how can we empower businesses to make those climate conscious choices? Yeah.
So, okay, you started seeing through groups like Climate Kick, different ideas, and they started gelling with some of the thoughts you had previously as someone who ran a business. And then that gave you kind of the customer perspective of, you remember needing this type of service. And so then this is how Climate Choice came about. Can you tell us a little bit about that? So who is it solving the problem for? It sounds like it's solving a sourcing problem, like a green sourcing problem. Who is it for? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I mean, actually, we started exactly, with the thought of, we're building kind of like the Amazon, like the B2B Amazon for only green, suppliers and green products to kind of like source them, right? That's exactly how we imagined it in the beginning. But what we're actually ended up doing, or what we're doing now, is actually really enabling companies to compare their supplier base based on climate management practices and data. What we learned is actually, the issue is that a lot of large, global enterprises, they cannot just, or they also don't want to change their existing supplier base necessarily, but they need to implement change in the supplier base, and they need to understand on where do the suppliers stand at, this point of time, and how can they help them, to provide them, first of all, better data, but also, how can they help them to change? Because supplier relations are mostly, grown over years. Maybe there's only one supplier or two suppliers that can provide, specific products and services. So the problem we started to understand is much more complex as we thought initially, and that's what we're basically doing now. So the problem that we're solving is basically we work with procurement teams and sustainability teams in large organizations to help them to understand their current supplier base by gathering data and also then feedbacking information to the suppliers so they can learn from the process and understand what they can do to become, better in their climate management and comply more with, upcoming regulations, but also the data needs of their corporate partners.
Okay, so it sounds a lot less transactional than a marketplace like Amazon as well. And crucially, it doesn't have just products, but you're also talking about services. I mean, if I think about large companies and greening their procurement, I'm not just thinking about computer equipment or photocopier paper, but also their electricity providers and their gas providers and all these kinds of things.
Exactly. I mean, it's massive. It's let's think about, steel providers or massive, industries or massive, products that companies buy and that really drive, their emissions. So it's really about understanding, yes, ideally on the product level, how do products compare? However, at this point of time, that data is barely available. So it's a lot about understanding on a company level, first of all, do they manage kind of like the topic of climate? Is that a company that has a plan on how to decarbonize, right? Because ultimately that will also affect the products. But this is a major issue in the whole, scope 3 topic, decarbonization topic, that product level data is not yet available. It's very expensive to calculate, and it's only kind of starting to become more available.
Can you quickly unpack scope 1, scope 2, and scope 3 and just tell us what those terms are?
Sure. So in carbon accounting, you differentiate between scope 1, 2, and 3, like you say. Scope 1 is basically the mission, the emissions that come from your own company's operations. Scope 2 are the emissions that derive from energy. And then Scope 3 is the upstream and downstream emissions from the value chain. So basically, you not only look at, you know, like your direct emissions, but Scope 3 is really about the indirect emissions, because, you know, like a lot of emissions are actually being emitted in the beginning, you know, like in the production phase, right? And then companies buy, you know, like these products, because we're now in this globalized world, you know, like everyone does its part. We're very, very efficient in terms of, you know, having specialized companies only doing a small part of the value chain and do that very efficient and for a good price most of the times, right? And then, but there's like that's where the emissions are stuck, right? So that is a big issue. And then also, of course, usage of products, right? So the downstream part of the value chain. So what happens after the product leaves your door? So what are actually the users of the products are emitting through downstream kind of like life cycle part. So that's in a nutshell what scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions are about.
Emissions gonna emit.
Exactly.
Okay, so scope 3 is basically from the supply chain, and that's where you're focusing. Why do big companies care if their supply chains are green or not?
In the end, it's about, you know, a lot of stakeholders demanding these informations, right? So they want to understand on how companies are, managing their climate emissions. Let's maybe start with, you know, like who are the stakeholders, right? So regulators, I mean, in Europe, there's the CSRD on the horizon, which has a big part about like...
What's that? Tell us about what that is.
The CSRD is the corporate's, the new directive to report on social, but also environmental topics. It's part of a bigger set it's the main part of bigger, you know, regulatory changes for achieving our 1.5 degree goal in the European Union.
And if I remember correctly, that affects about 50,000 companies across Europe that will now be required to report on emissions and other environmental and social standards.
Okay. Exactly. And this doesn't not only affect these 50,000 companies in the EU, but there's also a study that says it also will affect 10,000 other companies outside of the EU, because they have subsidies, you know, that are public companies,
right.
Or like maybe traded on a European, you know, market, or they also then the companies that are in the value chain, they are affected. So basically, it's really affecting everyone. I would say that is doing business with the EU or in the EU. So that is a very big topic currently, and. Yes, Ryan.
And is the directive around transparency? Is it the directive just around reporting? And then we'll see how the chips fall. And then there will be some competitive pressures from stakeholders to do better once this is kind of all out on the table. Or is this also about behavior change for the companies? Are there requirements for emissions as well that come with this? Or is that a later step?
No, exactly. So if currently the CSRD is in a, like there was just a big update last week. They actually also currently have a public feedback period, I think, in the next 4 weeks on the current kind of like requirements. And yes, climate is a big part. So it's not only about emission disclosures. So scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions. It's also about transition plans, right? It's also about understanding on how companies plan, you know, to move to a low carbon economy, basically, right? And reduce their emissions. And then this is not only relevant for companies, right? It's also the whole financial sector. There's the EU taxonomy that wants to understand actually business activities, right? And in connection to climate change mitigation and adaptation.
Taxonomy is a fancy word for setting the terms for something.
Yeah, exactly. So, so there's a lot of regulatory change happening. In the US, the SEC has published a proposal that is in discussion. Then there's on a more global level, the ISSB, the International Standard Setting Board, which is part of the IFRS, that is working on, you know, like also, you know, aligning, you know, global standards with the CSRD standards and so on. So there's a lot of stuff happening in the regulatory landscape all over the world. And then there's also the financial industry that, of course, then needs to report as well, right? They want to, and this is kind of like also, you know, scope three emissions for an investor. The scope three emissions are actually, you know, also their investments, right?
Yeah.
So they will need to report on that, and they will need to inform, you know, like their investors. And investors are more and more, you know, thinking about this, right? Like how, what is my money invested? You know, in a place that destroys the earth, or like that somehow contributes to you know, our climate targets. So yeah, there's
and hopefully there are more and more investors seeing the light on that, though I'm not always sure. But so some of the companies that you're working with, you're generally working with large corporates. Yeah. That's kind of your target, and we see a lot of these companies coming up with, or, you know, have kind of crossed the threshold of setting net zero goals for 2040 or this type of thing. And then now a lot of them are in the space of trying to find ways to implement that, right? When they, you know, it was hard enough for them to get these commitments through the board, and then everybody kind of took a break, and then the pandemic happened, all these things. And now, I mean, what I'm seeing is a lot of these companies struggling right now to find ways to actually implement that or kind of look at what that actually means. So is that, are you playing a role in that? Are you enabling that?
Exactly. I mean, like we always differentiate, we're not doing carbon accounting. That's typically done by consultancies. That's typically done by, you know, like there's a lot of, you know, carbon accounting companies that are doing software around this to calculate the emissions, typically using average emission factors, right? So you, for example, use your spent data as a company, and then you look at the emission factor. And I always say this is like calculating with an average price. So, you know, like everything looks the same.
Yeah. So that's better than nothing, but not totally accurate.
Exactly. It helps you to understand like the hotspots, where should I focus on? But then you need supplier specific information, and that's where we come in. So then we help, you know, to understand where the suppliers currently stand. We always say like we help them understand their climate maturity, and, you know, map the supplier structure, and then deriving, you know, insights and roadmaps to support, you know, suppliers or work with suppliers on decarbonization, and also track, you know, progress. So we are actually really focused on this part, on implementing change in your supplier base and getting the necessary data. Yeah.
And what kind of resistance do you hear? So what are the main objections for not doing this from big companies?
The issue is, what I most often hear, to be honest, is I just had the call this morning, like, I would love to do this. But, you know, like in our industry, it's hard currently. We don't have, you know, budgets, you know, are tight. You know, I'm trying to get this done and this. And so sustainability reporting was a marketing exercise, I think, in the past, right? And now, you know, like especially climate data is becoming financial relevant information. There is a whole shift for, like, you know, companies to prepare for that. And we're just in the process of that, that's happening. So the resources and budgets are not necessarily there yet, but we can see, you know, like a big shift happening. Lots of corporates are telling us, you know, like we have sustainability managers in every department, right? Before there was a team, you know, like in a massive company, maybe with 10 sustainability managers, maybe concerned with writing a report. But now it's really about, okay, you know, like we need this everywhere.
And it used to be we don't use plastic straws in the cafeteria anymore, and some nice pictures to go with it. And now investors are looking at this and looking at the future risk and discounting that today for things that won't be valuable anymore because of climate change. So so-called stranded assets and this type of thing. So it's actually the finance department looking at this now, and not only consumers looking for feel-good stories.
Exactly. And that's a big change. And that also makes it also complicated, right? There's lots of stakeholders involved. So typically, if we, you know, speak with companies there, so first of all, sustainability department or climate experts are involved, of course. That's the first, you know, typically the first conversations that we have. And then it's about getting the procurement department in, right? So there's the CPO then typically, you know, coming in and asking like very pragmatical process questions, right? So there's, you know, like this other stakeholder. And then sometimes then there's then, you know, like finance or investor relations coming in as well. So it's really, you know, that this is really another thing. I mean, like it's for me, it's very new, right? But before I worked with restaurants, it's mostly about, you know, like
talking to the owner.
Exactly. I'm talking to the owner, making convincing him to work with software. Now it's about, you know, like so many more, you know, complex, you know, interests and kind of like relations that are, of course, with any innovation topic, right? Like this is not exclusive to climate, but it's like with any innovation topic, right? Like corporates are not necessarily often, you know, prepared for change and rather work on exploiting, existing business models rather than, you know, are set up for constant change. So that's, I think, like a general challenge, I think.
No kidding. Yeah. So, okay. So if I'm the CEO of Acme Co, a multi-billion dollar widget manufacturer, and you're telling me that I should become a customer of Climate Choice, I'm going to push back and say, we don't have demand from this from our stakeholders. I don't have budget for this. This is a distraction away from our core business. Give me the case for why I need to do this now. What will happen if I don't do this? I work with a lot of companies who plan to open up shop in or expand across Europe. My one big piece of advice, don't fall into the trap of setting up a new entity right away. Instead, talk to my friends at Paracar, who can help you get up and running without all the costs, not to mention the legal and HR hassle. When I was hiring in different EU countries, I wanted my team to focus on their work, not on the country's bureaucracy. After interviewing a half dozen international expansion firms, I chose Paracar because they were by far the most knowledgeable and they're great people. Whether you're a large multinational looking to expand abroad, a small business looking for the right talent, or a contractor, they'll sort it out. Book a free, no-obligation consultation right now at paracar.eu/climate. That's paracar.eu/climate.
So basically, most of the companies actually are coming to us when they set, you know, climate targets. They understood their hotspots, you know, like they understand, okay, we have a problem there and we need to work with our suppliers and we need to get, you know, like this information. So typically that's where we start the conversations, and suppliers basically then start working with us because their customers also then demand the information, right? So they need to understand, or they need to, I want to also understand and what they can do to improve. So I think that's a good mechanism to drive change. However, you know, like in the case of what you were describing, right? If there's someone that is not convinced yet, I think it's basically about, will you be in business in 10 years or not? I mean, like the whole world, it's not about, you know, like measuring your emissions and, you know, like reporting these. It's about change, right? It's about change of business models. It's about a transition, like the finance world always transition to a low carbon economy. So think about, do you want to be in business in 10 years or not? And do you want to see, like, you know, like I would make the argument, do you want to see how your competitors are doing, right? And we can provide you some benchmarks and insights, you know, like in comparison, right? And this information then, of course, you know, is interesting to understand and motivate and send incentives to you know, think a little bit more about the topic.
It's interesting because large corporates, they generally don't want to be the first unless there's really good marketing reasons behind it, but they definitely don't want to be the last, right? Yes. So if you start riding this wave, and if they've all started setting, and it's great that you've got all this inbound demand basically for this, and people have already drunk the Kool-Aid on that they need to do this, and then it's more about trying to figure out how to do this. In another conversation I had with the climate tech investor, Melina Sanchez Montañez, she talked about how we tend to overemphasize carbon when there are so many types of pollution that we should be concerned about. Are you just looking at carbon? Are you looking at waste plastic or other aspects, or does it all come back to a carbon number?
I mean, we basically created a set of data points and information gathering, you know, points, so that you understand basically the environmental management, like do they have waste management, water management, etc. So we look a lot on, we understand climate as a whole, let's put it that way. However, I understand also the question that a lot of people say, okay, this is like always about carbon, sustainability, so much more. So fully, of course, into that. But it's very, you know, like the thing is on why we're doing it the way we're doing it and why we're so focused on the topic of climate and environment is because, you know, this is like the same for any industry and any company. Whereas sustainability, you typically start with a materiality analysis, you know, like what's interesting to your stakeholders and what's you know, relevant for your business. And then you pick the topics that are relevant, and that might be something totally different, you know, like in one industry versus the other. So it's very hard to compare this and also, you know, create a set of, you know, data points. And if you look at the, you know, like reporting frameworks, I mean, GRI, like Global Reporting Initiative, I think they have around 700 indicators that you could report on. And that's why we look on climate. And then also climate. And then carbon, you know, like also is a good measurement because it's basically an improved currency, right? There's, you can, all the other greenhouse gases are typically then, you know, translated to carbon. And also you can, most of the topics are basically translated into carbon. There's a global accepted, you know, accounting system, which is the greenhouse gas protocol. And it's much more, you know, standardized and accepted. And then on the product level, there's also like lots more happening on what are the standards that accept it. So it's, I think like the world is has accepted this kind of like accounting standard, and that's why it's also something that we really really think can drive change. And but yeah, we're looking at other environmental topics as well because it's
I guess it's crucial that we have kind of a framework for pricing carbon versus
exactly,
you know, pricing waste plastic or these types of things, or biodiversity. I mean, we can look at things like that are so
exactly
crucial
yeah
to climate change but are so hard to capture in any kind of meaningful way when investors or other types of stakeholders are involved. So what are you optimistic about? What do you, when you have these conversations? I mean, I'm already happy to hear that you have companies coming to you, and hopefully it's because they're sincere about change and not just because of reporting requirements. But what are you excited about when you have these conversations with these big companies?
And I mean, like I'm basically in a bubble, so I have to also take that into account. But so definitely biased around that. But like in general, I just see, you know, like climate is mainstream. It's not about when we first talked about it, right? I don't know which year it was. Like it was not that mainstream yet, right? Now everybody's talking about it. It's on the news every day. I mean, look at New York at the moment, New York City at the moment, right? I mean, I was traveling through climate change as well, like when I did a sabbatical, right, the bushfires, you know, like more than 50 degrees Celsius at 5 a.m. in the morning in India and Delhi. It's crazy, right? So it's not anymore, you know, something that is a niche topic, right? So I'm optimistic about that this has happened. I'm optimistic about that, you know, like more and more investors are understanding that is a financial risk, right? If companies don't manage that, not only from, you know, like this you know, pump or like production facilities being affected by a flood, but also because of, you know, business models not working long term anymore. So this makes me optimistic, I guess, and also what makes me optimistic is the regulatory environment that is changing. Although, of course, you know, like we should have much more lobbying. You know, like there was like this one podcast I listened to that corporates should actually use their lobbying structures to lobby for climate regulations instead of trying to protect their existing business models. But yeah, the regulatory environment is changing. We have targets. Climate is mainstream. It makes me optimistic. And I think like a lot of, you know, what makes me especially optimistic is kind of like our generation, I guess, because, you know, at that time, I see more and more people, you know, that we speak to, you know, like our generation that now becomes, you know, like gets into management departments and, you know, gets more decision-making power and really cares about that, right? So we can see a lot of people are like taking this serious, want to drive it in their organizations. And that makes me really, really optimistic.
Yeah, so you're a millennial. I'm an elder millennial, just after Generation X. And yeah, what we're also seeing right now is the largest transfer of private wealth in history from baby boomers to millennials. And that's having some impacts already on how assets are being invested, right? And so hopefully we'll see some more change happen there. And for me, I'm always looking towards the pension funds. And I think pension fund managers could be the heroes of the story in a lot of ways, and that could make for the most boring comic book series potentially ever. But but they could be the superheroes in climate, because all of finance kind of looks to them as the North Star as to what the trends are. So if we start to see some of that, but yeah, great to see that this is already happening quite a bit at the corporate level, and that I'm glad to hear that customers are coming to you.
Exactly. No, and then just to add on the what you just said, right? Like, investors should look at this as biggest business opportunity that is in front of us, right? Like, where can you have more business opportunity if not in climate or in low carbon products, services, etc., that drive down emission reduction? And we're seeing this. You and me were more I think in the startup world, right? Like, I cannot count how many climate funds, like venture capital funds, were started in the last 2 years. I cannot count.
Especially in your city of Berlin, there's a lot happening there.
yeah. But also in the US, right? So anyways, no, definitely. That makes me optimistic.
Yasha, who is your personal hero?
Yeah. You sent me that question right before I had to think a little bit about it. I think
it's the hardest of these questions.
Yeah, definitely. So, my hero and what I came up to is, I think, anyone in any organization that is taking risk to drive change. I think you don't need to be an Elon Musk, to actually do stuff, right?
Hopefully not.
Exactly. I'm just, you know what I mean. So the your impact can be even larger if you change the organization that you're working in, right? Like, we had the Dr. Jonathan Foley from Project Drawdown speaking at our annual conference, and he said every job is a climate job, right? And I think that's what we should think about, how can we drive change where we are in our roles, because it's about incremental, step by step, bringing that into organizations. And I think the people that are really my heroes is anyone that is driving this forward in organizations. And I'm glad that I have the opportunity to work with so many people and speak to so many people that are really serious about this and care about it.
That's a very diplomatic answer that will go over well also in some of your marketing materials to the change makers internal to these large corporations. So I'm glad you're testing out some of your messaging here on the podcast. It's multi-purpose podcast.
Okay.
Yasha, so great to see you. So great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Ryan, for having me. It was great. It was great fun. And hopefully we see us in person soon again. Thanks. Bet.
Thanks for listening to another Climate Tech podcast. Please take 5 seconds to send this episode link to a colleague or friend who you think might be interested. Reach out to me anytime at hello@climatetechpod.com. As you can probably tell, this episode was produced, edited, directed, stage managed, boom operated, and everything else by me. Subscribe to hear many more conversations still to come with the world's real climate tech heroes. This episode is supported by Grizzle, B2B content to create and capture demand. I first met Grizzle's founder, Tom Whatley, 5 years ago at a conference in Dublin. I was so impressed that I signed a deal with him to do all my software company's content that same evening at the pub. Remember that, Tom?
Kinda.
And they're still doing it 2 years after we sold the company, because the new owners love Grizzle as much as I do. If you sell B2B, book 30 minutes in Tom's calendar at grizzle.io/climate. That's grizzle.io/climate.